the reality is that we are under this delusion that building more data centers and paying more for AI and spending for more and more on this on growing scale is the only solution. And it's going to create economic growth, and it's going to create this future utopia. And what we're finding is that the underlying finance economics of that is not a reality.
Hello. Welcome to the Big Bang Tech Report. Today we discuss robots, cheaper AI, and new devices. But one question stands above everything. Is a major AI crash coming soon? Once again, is a major AI crash coming soon? Whoa. My guest is Evan Van Grelen. And Evan, let us begin.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. We've been a couple weeks apart, so lots to talk about.
Yeah, it's true. So robots are coming is the first headline. And robots are learning much faster today. Videos show them boxing, dancing, jumping, but great videos do not prove a business model. Question for you: are humanoids robots already a real business?
Sadly to say, not really. They make for very good demos. They make for nice highlight reels. But if you look at the unit numbers that are being sold today, I think last year was in the tens of thousands globally, right? So when a device is in the tens of thousands of units across over 100 companies, it's not a real business yet. Now I think it will be in a few years. But the other thing is, a lot of the robots demos that you see are ones that look completely humanoid, as in they have arms and legs and they walk like humans. I actually believe that longer term, even humanoid robots that are arms and heads on top, they probably will have wheels or some other type of platform, just because the energy it takes to balance one of these robots is very wasteful when most of the time they're probably just standing someplace, right? And if they're working in a factory, it's also usually a fixed location, so it may just be a half a body. They don't even need legs. So I think we just watch too much sci-fi movies. So we seem to want to embody a full human body onto these robots.
But well, we do not watch so much sci-fi videos. We have a look at YouTube, and there we see Unitree and all these big producers, how they publish videos, and they are really impressive. And I've met Xingxing Wang. He is the CEO of Unitree in China, and he told us in 3 years that these robots will do 80% of the work we give to them. Do you believe in that?
I think in certain constrained environments, that's possible, right? So if you're in a factory, if you're in a particular warehouse, something that's fixed, but having robots go to your home within 3 years and be able to, essentially help you make breakfast, do your laundry, I think that's going to take a little bit of time. In fact, most of the demos that you see are essentially pre-scripted demos. They programmed it, across, all the dancing robots or things. And a lot of the ones that you see are actually hand-controlled robots that even today, most of the robots are out there, they're being controlled by a remote control in the operator's hand. Like the ones that were running the marathons, there was actually somebody behind them with a controller pushing the buttons. So, in addition, we need to kind of separate the moving of the robots, the jumping, the running, from manipulation. And manipulation is actually very difficult right now. The hands on these robots and the dexterity is really not there yet. There are some prototype hands that seem to work quite well, but they're very early stage. And you need to then train these robots for the real world, whether you're, you know, holding a baby or you're holding a box, you're going to hold it differently. And whether you're holding, you know, a soft body versus a hard body versus, you know, a thread, you know, these type of differences, our current systems for managing these robots aren't able to accommodate the high variance that happens in the real world. But if you're in a factory and there's a certain type of things, limited type of things that move by, I think then those type of roles can be done.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Hollywood. They are selling dreams, and we love these dreams. And it's scaring, but it's interesting. And we will see. Let's have a look. But our next headline is AI without the cloud. That's something very big. Powerful AI until now still needs large data centers. All over the world, the big companies, they are building data centers. But models are becoming smaller and more efficient. Top models may soon run directly on laptops. I think we have mentioned it several times on our show. And what does local AI mean for OpenAI and the others?
Yeah, I think this is actually a big question. In fact, I think about a week ago, there was a chart that came out. They were saying, looking at how quickly these models are becoming smaller and smaller. And it used to take 3 or 4 years for something from a data center to become something that's available on your laptop or on your phone. And the prediction is that a Mythos level AI will be something that can run on your phone within or on your laptop within the next 1.5 years, right? So essentially right now, the top of the line right now that are, you know, secret that, you know, most people can't even get access to, that will be something that will run on your laptop within 1.5 years. So if that's really the case, I think it's a relatively bare scenario for the standalone AI labs, because the reality is that most humans probably don't even need Mythos level AI, right? If you had GPT-4 level AI, that's probably enough for most personal use. If you're, you know, summarizing emails or you're writing a document, you know, those type of level of AI is already good enough, you know. So when something as good as Mythos becomes available on your laptop or your phone, the need to go out to the cloud becomes less and less. And that also means that with the open source models that are coming, these models can be downloaded for free and running on your personal device. For a lot of people, that's really important because it allows them to maintain privacy, right? I don't need to give all of my questions and answers and my interests to a OpenAI or Anthropic who may sell me ads or sell my information to other people. Or in the case of what Alex Karp said a week and a half ago, that he thinks that, you know, these companies are stealing your alpha, stealing the secrets of your company and duplicating will duplicate your company, right? So whether from a personal basis or from a company basis or even from a national basis, right, sovereign AI issues, I think if there's an option to have something that you can control the full access of your information, it's probably a positive thing.
But what does it mean for the cloud industry?
So this kind of goes to the article I just wrote recently about the potential coming crash. But I think what this shows is that we probably are overbuilding on the hardware data centers. Most of the data centers that are being built today half of them are being delayed right now for multiple reasons. But it's likely that most of those half will never get done, and even the ones that are being built may or may not get done, at least in the time frame that they have been forecasting. And the companies who are spending all the monies to build these data centers will probably become going into some type of financial challenge in the near term, so, or midterm.
But is there a development that AI is becoming cheaper and cheaper, and what does it mean for the labs?
So if you look at the same intelligence level, the AIs actually are cheaper at 10 to 40x per year. So I'm not saying, you know, the frontier level, because the frontier keeps getting smarter and smarter. But if you're, you know, buying a AI level of a year ago, it's probably 10 to 40 times cheaper. So from that perspective, essentially, good enough AI will be very affordable, if not free, within the next few years, essentially the cost of electricity.
But what does it mean for this for Anthropic and ChatGPT if it is for free, more or less? There is no business model anymore, and they want to go to the stock market.
Yes. So this is the issue: is that they have a different type, I think, of calculus in their mind. Their mind is that they will find this AI. This AI will be so good that it will find and create their next business model, right? And this is actually what Sam Altman said maybe a year or 2 years ago. Somebody asked him, how are you going to make money? You're spending all this money. And he says, well, you know, I'm not smart enough, but when I make AGI, AGI is going to tell me how to make money. It sounds like a little bit of a joke, but I think some of them actually maybe do believe it. The reality is that there will still definitely be some people, some very high enterprises, governments, research labs that will still want to use these online really giant models. And there's probably a business there. But is it a business that will sustain a $1 trillion valuation or sustain a multi-$1 trillion CapEx build out? It's hard to say. I would be suspicious of that. I think a lot of them are also thinking, hey, now that I have this capability, I can then duplicate the software companies. I can duplicate an Oracle or Salesforce and bring that value in. The problem with that is, once you have it, then everybody else can just make their own Salesforce. Then, you're not going to be able to take the same. You won't be able to take a $1,000 subscription for Salesforce to go from Salesforce into the hands of these AI labs. So the economics are not clear.
But the pressure is high for the engines, and there's another battlefield. Apple and OpenAI were close partners. Now they could become more direct competitors. The real battle concerns access to people. And should Apple fear OpenAI more?
I actually think it should be the other way around. OpenAI hired a few hundred people actually from Apple. And now they're being sued because certain people actually brought information from Apple to OpenAI. I think there definitely is grounds for Apple to be filing these lawsuits. But at the same time, OpenAI is not a hardware company. And I've run hardware companies, I've run software companies, and they are very, very different. And the culture and people are very different. And the know-how is very different. And right now, Apple, has billions of customers, right? More than probably 1 to 2 billion customers globally. This is not something that you can displace as a startup. And the one thing that I think OpenAI right now needs Apple for is access to the customer, right? Because they don't have hardware. They are an application on top of an operating system on top of hardware. And if Apple controls the hardware and the operating system, Apple gets to decide whether or not you're even in the App Store. And if you're not in the App Store, you don't have a business, right? At least from a software perspective. Even if you're in the App Store, do you have permission to get the microphone? Do you have permission to see the calendar? Do you have permission to send an email, right? All of these things that will be naturally given to the AI solution from Apple itself, but the Apple gets to choose, do I give it to Anthropic? Do I give it to OpenAI? Do I give it to, Grok, right? So I think it's actually something that the software companies need to be more afraid of the platforms.
You are a busy man, and you wrote another article or a new paper. Yeah, I don't know when you sleep, but that's your secret. And this the headline is "The Great AI Reckoning," and AI is a revolutionary technology, but its financing may not be sustainable. And the current business model may be the real problem. And my question is, are we facing a great AI reckoning?
Well, I mean, this is kind of how, your last few questions, I think, already answers this particular one, is that, if we know that we are spending too much, if we know that the long-term macro picture is that the cost, the price of tokens are getting cheaper and cheaper, and intelligence is being commoditized. There definitely needs to be a correction, because right now the entire stock market and the economy is built on expecting AI to be a decatrillion business in the next couple of years. right? Which I just don't see happening. I think some people essentially projected forward the growth in the early stage of Anthropic and said, oh, Anthropic, a year ago, they were, you know, $1 billion. Now their run rate is, you know, something like 30 to 40 billion. That means next year they will be, you know, 400 billion. And the year after they will be 4 trillion, you know. And the world doesn't work that way, right? When you're smaller, you can grow. But once you get to a certain size, things will slow down. And I think what we will find is that soon these companies will report that their growth have slowed. They're not growing at 10 times a year or 40 times a year. And when that happens, the 1,000 or the 100x multiples of the revenue becomes unsustainable.
But this question we have all the time in the markets. If there are, where is the business model? Where is AI overvalued? And so on. And then Jens Wang and all these guys, they come up and they say, okay, no, everything is fine. This is the biggest industry we see in our lifetime. And please invest.
Well, I think it's you have to look at who's saying and why they're saying it, right? Jensen, I have the most respect for him. He's one of the best CEOs out there, and he's built a, you know, a $4-5 trillion business. But what he's saying is something that supports his business, right? And what he's been doing in the last few years is essentially he's investing in the companies who buy his products. He's investing in the companies who distribute and operate his products. In fact, he's even giving a backstop so that he will buy the services from the hyperscalers and the neoclouds if they don't have the business for it, right? So he's the insurance policy for somebody buying his business. And that type of circular dealing, it's great for his stock price, it's great for his revenues, but it's not clear it's sustainable. And there needs to be real revenues coming from real companies that will pay for it versus the investors that are paying for it. Right now, most of the people who are paying for cloud services are the AI labs. And the AI labs are subsidizing their customers to be able to acquire and keep their customers, right? When the revenue is, you know, 100% or 90% real customers versus the labs paying the hyperscalers who then, you know, buy the devices, who then get investment from the GPU companies. If once we move out of that circular system, then you can prove this is a healthy, natural business. Until that happens, it is quite questionable.
But they believe if AI is moving more to the industry, that the industry can use more AI and to be more efficient and will pay much more money for it. Is that a solution for you?
No, because exactly what we said earlier is that in fact, because I've spoken to hundreds of companies in the last few years, I know how they're using it and I know how much they care about spend and budget, right? For 1 to 2 months earlier this year in Q2, people got a little crazy and they just said, spend and just, you know, try it because Jensen said so. Because Jensen said half of, you know, you should spend half as much on your salary as on AI. And that's the right ratio. And people went crazy doing that. And then the bills came in and people said, oh, wait, we're spending all of this, you know, millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, but we're not getting any real return from it. You know, if that frenzy stops and the real businesses wake up, every business has to make their books balance, right? So when you spend money, you have to get something back. And this is, you know, the fact that I just spent, you know, a couple of days with a few hundred billionaires and business owners, and they care very, very much about every dollar they spend, they want to get value from. And right now, it's not clear that you spend an extra dollar, you get, you know, $2 back in terms of AI returns, right? And I think that's the hope is there, but I don't think the reality is proving that out. So again, I'm not saying AI doesn't work. I think AI is amazing. I think AI is going to create great value, but the value will not accrue to the AI labs because it is a commoditizing technology.
But we have heard very often, I think, from Jeff Bezos too, if you put the label AI on a project, it goes to the roof. It's everybody pay a lot of money for it. So until now, a lot of people are losing money, especially the AI labs. But what will happen later on is you are talking about a crash in a year, within a year. How sure is it? Why do you believe in it? And what does it mean?
Well, I, so this is actually, it, you know, it sounds like a bad thing, but I think it actually may be one of the best things that can happen to our society right now. Right. And I'll, and this is kind of what my, my paper was talking about, because the reality is that we are under this delusion that building more data centers and paying more for AI and, you know, spending for more and more on this on growing scale is the only solution. And it's going to create economic growth, and it's going to create, you know, this future utopia. And what we're finding is that, you know, the underlying finance economics of that is not a reality. And when these numbers actually get reported, and we see that, you know, people are spending, you know, America is going to spend somewhere around 800 to 900 billion this year, and 1.2 to 1.3 trillion next year, just on CapEx, just with the top 5-6 companies, right? Not to mention all the other costs out there. In fact, 90%+ of the growth in GDP in the U.S. is related to AI build out. This is very, very one-sided and very unhealthy. This is a much larger risk than the 2000 internet bubble. You know, at that time, the internet sector was something like 35% of the total stock market in America. Right now, the AI business, the AI industry itself, is around 45% of the total stock market today. Just, you know, a few companies, right? It is so. If anything happens to them, if anything happens to the belief that AI is the future and will bring lots of revenue, I believe that AI is a future, is a great technology. But what I don't believe is that AI will create massive amounts of new revenue, because it is a technology that is becoming cheaper and cheaper over time. And when things are getting cheaper and cheaper, even though you have people who said, oh, but then you have Jevons paradox, which means that the cheaper it gets, the more you use. Yes, the truth is the more you use, but the more you use is the ones that were going to run on your laptop and on your phone for free, not the one that you will pay $50 or $100 per million tokens to the Anthropics and the OpenAIs of the world, right? So if you look over the last 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, there's been a major change in terms of open router traffic. A year and a half ago, 2% of traffic was going to open source models. Right now, over 60% of the traffic is going to open source models. If that trend continues, you know, within another year, we'll probably be 80% will be open source models. So more and more of the traffic is going to open source, more and more is going to the edge being devices that you control, and, you know, less and less will go to the high-end frontier models. And all the same time, we are building out more and more data centers, which makes the supply bigger and bigger. And when the supply is bigger and the price is under pressure, essentially you become pressured to go to zero margin. People will sell these premium systems or premium solutions for cheaper and cheaper, because they have to be able to pay back the cost of building these data centers, right? So this is all the macro forces are going against us long-term or mid-term, actually.
And where are the open models? They are in China mostly?
Yeah, right now the best open models are in China. But then, you know, I think NVIDIA actually had just recently released their Nemotron model that is, you know, pretty good. And Japan has a pretty good model. I think France has a pretty decent model. Singapore recently released a model. So right now, actually, models are coming out around the world. I think the best ones, best open source are still in China. But right now, what we're seeing is that you don't have to be US and China to make decent models.
Yeah. And who will face first this pressure that will come? The chip makers, the AI labs, the cloud companies?
Yes, actually, yes, yes, and yes. I think that the biggest pressure will be the pure play AI labs, because they only have one revenue source, right? They have to sell tokens. If they cannot sell tokens, they will go out of business. right? And they are also highly leveraged. They've made commitments. You know, I think OpenAI has made commitments of something like $600 or $700 billion over the next 4 or 5 years. Anthropic's probably made, you know, a couple of $200-$300 billion of commitments as well. So all of these commitments are ones that you, at some point, people are going to come and collect. And if your revenues are in tens of millions or tens of billions, and your commitments of to repay things are in the hundreds of billions, it doesn't end well, right? Now, I think that the next one to actually be affected is the chip companies, the memory companies and the GPU companies, because they've gone up, you know, 5-10x over the last, you know, few years. And when that happens, it's the expectation in the market is that this will continue. The growth that they've seen, these doublings and triplings of revenue and inventory, or not inventory, revenue and production, is going to continue. Those, once there's any sign that that does not continue, then there will be massive selling and correction. And, you know, coming down happens a lot faster than going up.
Yeah, of course. And it's a very painful situation, a very painful thing for a lot of investors, for a lot of people. I think nearly everybody has in his funds, in the stock market, has Nvidia shares and so on. But do you see something positive in this situation? If the crash will come and then we have a reset, or how do you see the situation then?
Yeah, so this is actually the whole point of this new paper you mentioned earlier. It's called the reckoning before the reconnecting, right? And so the reckoning is what we just described, is a major market correction. And the reason I think this is actually potentially positive is that leaders of, you know, both companies and countries tend to want to delay decisions until there's a crisis. And when there is a crisis, then all the things that used to be unimaginable becomes possible. And, you know, difficult decisions are forced to happen. And I think, you know, as crises go, a market correction is painful, but it's a relatively reversible crisis, as we've seen multiple times throughout history, is that, you know, markets crash, and within a year or two or five, they come back. But rather than having things like wars or famines or a big you know, health crisis, things that would take much longer to recover from. So, but my forecast is that there will be five reconnectings, and one reconnecting is that I think U.S. and China will stop this race. It's actually an unhealthy and unnecessary race, and they will start to work together. They will actually, you know, China U.S. will need China to help sustain and maintain stability in the global economy. This is what happened in 2008 with the great financial crisis. China actually kept buying U.S. bonds, even though they supported the U.S. They had a major stimulus bill. So it kept the global economy going when everything could have been much worse, right? And
they did it because everybody is sitting in the same boat. It's not only for humanity, because they need the markets too. Yeah.
Yes. Well, exactly. And I think this is the same case now, is that when this crashes, it will bring pressure on everyone. And China again realizes that they can be the supporter, and they will trade something, right? I mean, I think, you know, China wants to end all of these export controls. China wants to be able to have, you know, no tariffs, you know, or reduce it to be even with everyone, all these things, right? So I think, you know, there will be some discussions, and, you know, Trump is probably one of the few people that are much more transactional and willing to discuss this. So I think if U.S. and China can solve their differences, that allows these two countries to stop overspending on this race and start to share the resources and decide that, okay, let's work on AI together rather than fighting against each other. Let's now, once we have that, we also then maybe think about how do we help the rest of the world catch up with AI, because when they catch up, they grow their economy, they become a market for us. The same thing that happened after World War II, when the U.S. you know, spent, I think, $17 billion on the Marshall Plan to help rebuild Europe. And when that happened, you know, essentially it grew the economy of Europe. It became Europe became a great customer. Same for, you know, I think that the U.S. spent about $5 billion on Japan, Korea, and Philippines rebuilding, right? Again, so they made a bunch of friends and allies around the world that became long-term, you know, customers and partners. And I think this will be the same case as when this crash happens, it will affect everyone. And but if the US and China, instead of building giant data centers that are for a race, they start to build smaller data centers that are cheaper around the world, they essentially create the resources for these countries to take advantage of this technology, and it raises everybody together, right? So that's another reconnecting. So the fractured world that we have today will actually become more connected again. The other thing that will happen is that if AI does what we think it will do, and it will affect jobs, people will need to work less and they will have more time. And that more time will allow them to spend more time at home and reconnect with family, reconnect with their communities, which I think a lot of places have lost, right? The fourth one is a reconnecting with nature, right? We've been in a world where we're fighting to show who's higher status because of what we have, how much we own, how much wealth we have, you know, and how big our house is, or whether we have a yacht or a jet. And the reality is that, you know, these things matter less and less when you start to see everybody growing together, and we have to change the value systems. And when we start to realize that we have enough, most people already, particularly in the US and Europe, we already live, you know, far advanced of most of the other people in the world. We can actually reduce our strain on the environment, allow it to renew itself, become more in balance, which I think is something that it's also, we see all the heat waves right now around the world. You know, a lot of that is attributed to things that we are doing. And then lastly, we actually need to reconnect again with our inner self, with our spiritual self, of really finding more meaning. And, if jobs are no longer where we find meaning, then we need to find more meaning in other places. And really, I think focusing more on how do we learn more? How do we self-grow? How do we see ourselves as individual beings? And, you know, this one may be a little bit more nebulous, but I think that the first four are very real reconnectings that can happen if we make the right decisions.
But I think to discuss everything like what you have mentioned, we need three more hours and to go deep. And maybe we should discuss it in Berlin at the Big Bang AI Festival, because I think it's very, very important to see where we can go, what is our future, and to make hope to the people that at least everything will change and will be better. But to come there, it's painful. For a lot of people, it will be painful.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, change is always painful. And one of the things that humans resist is change, right? Even if it's good for them. You know, even if it's medicine, people are like, oh, I don't want to take a shot. I don't want to go to the dentist, right? So it has to be painful enough that it forces action. And I think this may be the impetus that starts us off on a better path. And you know, that this is what you said is very important, is hope. Because everything I read today, of all these expert forecasts, it's either, you know, we're going to get into a total bifurcation of, you know, trillionaires and have-nots, or you know, there's going to be major war, or AI is going to come and kill us all and turn us into, you know, slaves, right? And this is the future that you read in all of these expert forecasts and reports, and it's not hopeful. And it's not helpful, because it says there's nothing you can do. And the reality is that there's so much we can do, and we should let people know there are things that we can do.
So normally we have the last one, what keeps you awake at night, Elvin? But I think we need some positive to go out of our show. Do you have something positive for me, for the audience? What is your message there?
I spending the last couple of days with a lot of these very high net worth people, it actually makes me feel positive, in the sense of you hear in the news, oh, the rich people, they're greedy, and you know, they only looking out for themselves and blah blah blah. And I would say half of the conversations that we're having here is, how can I give back? You know, what can I do to leave a legacy? How can I make the world better? You know, how should I use the money that I have to help society, right? And when when you, you know, so the caricature that you hear in the news about, you know, take down the billionaires, I think it's not necessarily representative. There may be a few people who are only after power and wealth, but I think usually the people who become wealthy is because they did something that provided a value to society that brought them that wealth. And it also, they had to go through a certain life experience to get there. And the more intelligent you are, the more you start to realize the interdependence and the interconnection between, you know, all people in society. And, you know, the caricature of the greedy billionaire, I think it's not as accurate as people say. So hopefully that is a slightly lighter message that I think we should think about. How do we work with them to bring positive change?
So you see a crash within a year, that's a reset for everything and a painful reset. And then we will have a better system because you told that the politician will wake up, that people will wake up and they will turn things in a different way. And we will have, at least something new, something special and something positive if everybody believes in it. So I think... We will discuss in the next shows about everything, and we will see what's going on there. But it's interesting. Thank you very much for your thoughts. And our show is over. This was the Big Bang Tech Report, and you will go to Shanghai, and you will explain the world what's going on, right?
Yes, I'm heading to Shanghai tomorrow for the World AI Conference, which is the biggest. I guess AI conference in Asia. So it'll be interesting. I'll have lots to report back on when we meet again. So
yeah, I'm happy to meet you at the next show in 2 weeks, and you see if anybody has some questions, please send us an email and let's talk. Let's have a discussion, and we need a discussion for everything. Thank you very much, Alvin.
Thank you. And do read the Substack of Abundantist. It's called The Reckoning Before the Reconnecting. So thank you.
Thank you very much.